Hello, Paul. Welcome back to my office. How are you feeling this week? What's on your mind, my friend?
Thank you, Dr. Hammerstabber. I'm really worried about what I'll be like in the future. Like, I just turned 50. And what will I be like in 10 years' time? What if I'm a complete arsehole? I mean, you know, what if, you know, like someone really nice like Clinton Robson just turns out to be an arsehole in 10 years' time? You know?
Casting aspersions on your friend. Jesus. I think the arseholitis is starting to set in already.
Well, that's a bit harsh. Yeah, but what will I do if in the future, you know, I'm not nice? You know, would someone stop me? Would someone come and stop me from being nasty? Being a villain?
Oh, we wouldn't want that. No, no. Maybe you need to start being nice now, especially to this poor Clinton friend. I mean, he might be a perfectly reasonable gentleman. And I can't see why he would turn evil. You, maybe.
He's pretty suspicious. Anyway.
It's because he's American, isn't it? Do you recall? A house was very small. With wood chip on the wall. When I came round to call, you didn't notice me at all. And I said, let's all meet up in the year 2000. Won't it be strange when we're all fully grown? In there, 2 o'clock by the fountain down the road. I never knew that you'd get married. I would be living down here on my own. On that damn, the lonely Thursday years ago.
Hello and welcome to DC OCD, the DC event podcast, and we are worming our way through the DC events bit by bit in order, and we have come to the year 1991, and we today are looking at Armageddon 2001. And when I say we, I'm talking about myself and my good friend Clinton Robertson from the Coffee and Comics podcast. Did I get your name right? Did I get your podcast right?
Yes.
Great.
I believe so. Close enough.
Excellent. Good chat. Anyway, on the show today, it's Armageddon 2001. Now, to get here, we did kind of ignore a couple of other things which people might think of as events, but we've decided they're not. And one of those is the Janus Directive, which is the pretty cool story that crossed over the Checkmate and Suicide Squad with a little side order of Manhunter and Firestorm and Captain Atom. Good story, not really big enough to be an event, and very sort of self-contained to the DC spy agency universe at the time. And the other one was Superman Exile, when Superman went off into space to recover from his trauma. And had quite an exciting time in space until he came back. So are you familiar with both those events, Clinton?
I'm familiar with Exile. I have not read Janus Directive, no.
Oh, it's awesome. You should read it. Anyway, I'm not going to push on this show. Anyway, Armageddon 2001, which came out in 1991. Now, this was written by Archie Goodwin and Dennis O'Neill, and I'm talking about just the bookend. So this format was, there was a book at the start and there was a book at the end, and they were big fat books. And in between, DC did something different. They chucked in annuals. So all the annuals got to play in this story and not the regular issues. So we had the Superman annual, the Batman annual, the Justice League of America annual, Hawk and Dove annual, Hawk World annual, the Flash annual, Action Comics annual, so a bit of Superman in there, Legion with the dots, 91 annual, New Titans annual, The Adventures of Superman annual, and Detective Comics annual, and Justice League Europe annual. So, but between all those stories, there's so many different creators. I'm not going to list them all. I'll just list the creators on the main bookend books, which was penciled by Dan Jurgens, inked by Dick Giordano, Art Thibault and Steve Mitchell, colored by Anthony Tolan and Adrian Roy, lettered by Albert de Guzman and John Costanza, and all edited by Dennis O'Neill, doing writing and editing. So, Clinton, do you want to take us through what it involved and what it was about?
So, just the general overview, Armageddon 2001 starts us off in, appropriately enough, 2001, which was 10 years in the future from the DC Universe at the time, obviously. We are shown a dystopian future in which all heroes have been killed and Monarch reigns supreme. Monarch is pretty much this faceless figure, but we have statues of him up everywhere. He's completely clad in armor. No one knows his identity. Some people aren't even sure he even exists. He may just be a concept created by the state. But Matthew Ryder, who somewhat remembers a time when they were heroes, keeps doing research into the time when there were heroes, which of course is quite forbidden by Monarch's government. And he ends up getting picked up by Monarch, gets more or less experimented on to see if time travel is possible for a specific human being.
And, mainly him.
Yes. And he becomes Wave Rider.
Wave Rider. And
Monarch sends him back in time for a specific purpose, but instead Wave Rider decides to rebel and try to see who Monarch is and stop him, you know, a la would you kill Hitler kind of scenario.
Yeah, so he gets this great opportunity to visit different characters in the DC Universe and tap into their future and basically it's an excuse to tell stories in the annuals. So, you know, possible what-ifs, Elseworlds sort of things that may come to be. But as it goes on, he discovers that if he visits a character twice, which he does with the more popular characters like Superman and Batman for some reason, he gets different versions of their future. So, you know, this is a real fly in the ointment because he's not just seeing one possible future, he's seeing several possible futures, which sort of, you know, if you're a scientist and you're doing experiments, that sort of negates a lot of your results pretty much.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention, you know, for people who are unfamiliar with this, the reason he's checking out the heroes is because Monarch used to be a hero.
Yeah, that was the big setup of this, was there's the mystery of one of these heroes is going to become a baddie, and you know, we didn't know who it was, and it was a cool mystery. Like, I was really keyed into that and very curious to see who it would be revealed to be. So the annuals aren't really that connected, though, are they, Clinton?
The first few are pretty semi-connected. You know, like the first book end tells you to go pick up the Adventures of Superman annual. I think it's Adventures.
Superman.
I forget which one. Yeah, but and then from that it tells you to go to Batman. But then after that, they're all pretty much here and there, until you get to the Justice League Europe, which is right before the second bookend.
Yeah, and that's the one. That one is a bit of a format buster for that, because instead of telling, you know, one big story in the future, it tells about 10 different stories in the future with each member of the Justice League, except they've all been sent to the past, which makes it kind of interesting and fun, because they get to visit.
Not all. Not all.
That's true, not all.
Blue Jay goes to the time of the Legion, but yeah, everybody else is pretty much to the past. But yeah, the both Justice League books were the comic relief of the crossover.
Yeah.
Which I mean, that matched the format of the Justice League books at the time, but you know, still for a very, well, not very, but you know, fairly serious story about heroes going dark. Like you said, it kind of didn't really match with everything else.
Yeah. And the Justice League America annual was actually taking place at the same time as Breakdown. So Maxwell Lord was in a coma throughout that story as well. So, you know, what are the highlights for you, Clint? What's the biggest big deals? What's the best bits? Which annual do you think is the best one?
Oh, gosh. Well, overall, you know, your biggest moments, of course, are going to be the creation of Wave Rider, the reveal of Monarch, and you know, 27-year-old spoiler alert here, the death of Dove. But gosh, for what annuals are my favorites? That first Superman part, the what was it, Superman Annual 3?
Yep.
Yeah, that one is always a highlight for me. First Batman story is pretty good. Honestly, Justice League Europe was one of my favorites, though.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think it's the most fun story. I mean, some of them become a little bit of a slog. I'm looking at you, New Titans Annual.
We have things to say about New Titans Annual.
But, I mean, the Superman ones, they're all good. They're all different stories. So one is basically, it's sort of like a alternate take on the Dark Knight Returns Superman-Batman fight. And then you've got the Action Comics Annual, which is Superman's in a situation where he has to become the president of the United States, which would be great right now. And then there's the one where Superman starts a dynasty with Maxima. He finally succumbs to Maxima's pursuit. They're pretty good. The Batman ones, I don't find them that memorable. The Titans. What would you like to say about the New Titans Annual number 7?
Oh, the New Titans. The most uncharacteristic Nightwing story you'll ever read.
Yeah,
it's Nightwing with a giant Captain America style shield and a gun.
Right. Yeah, officially out of ideas there.
But, you know, bringing up the New Titans Annual, that was a concept that pretty much stayed around for the next 3 years, the Team Titans.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it served as a good introduction for them, but
it wasn't a great period of the Titans, was it?
No, I mean, this is the 90s creeping into DC, so.
Yeah. Well, the things were starting really well with Titans Hunt, and towards the end of Titans Hunt, I felt like the story just got away from Marv Wolfman completely. I don't even think he knew what he was writing at that point. And then the Team Titans, I mean, I was sucked into it. Like, I bought into it, and then after a while you realize it's just empty calories. It's all, it looks great, but it ain't good for you.
But at the same time, there are other things that were introduced in these annuals that not necessarily stuck around, but got revisited later on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Superman president, how can you not say that's, you know, somebody given a motivation for President Luthor, which was 10 years down the line, by the way.
Yeah.
In the Batman annuals, there's one where he pretty much ends up with more or less a broken back. You know, Nightfall's not more than about 3 years away, two years away. Wally West becoming a father, that's way down the line. I mean, you can argue that one, but who's to say that it wasn't inspired by these stories?
Yeah. And the Legion 91 annual is probably the most forgettable because I can't remember a single thing about it now.
I actually like that one.
Was it? It was set in the future, wasn't it?
Yes, it was set 10 years in the future. Go figure. But, I had no idea anything about these characters other than Lobo when I first read it. And I just had barest knowledge of Lobo.
Yeah.
But I thought it was an interesting story. It was.
They biffed Lobo. They made him a bit like Biff in the future, like he was just a bit sad and overweight.
Yeah. But, I mean, it kept closer to the theme of Armageddon 2001 than most of the annuals did.
Yeah.
You had the idea that Vril Dox was actually going to be this world conqueror. And instead, you know, some of the other annuals, like going back to the Flash annual, it's all about Wally trying to rescue his kidnapped son.
Yeah.
There's no chance of Wally becoming Monarch in that story at all.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, I mean, you can't talk about this event without talking about what happened at the end of the event, which, for my money, basically ruins the event pretty much because...
You mean the part where everybody lived happily ever after and nothing was ever screwed up ever again?
Yeah, well, we should explain. Basically, as you read these, it becomes pretty clear, and even the annual that ends right before part two, where the big reveal is, it actually ends with Wave Rider tapping in to look at Captain Atom's future, and then it just ends right there. You go, okay, wow, something big with Captain Atom. At the same time, Captain Atom's book had just been cancelled, and in the book he was sort of fighting these sort of dark gods in the African continent, and they sort of possessed him at one point, and you were never really sure if he came out of that okay. And I was all geared up to see this the reveal of Captain Atom. I thought, okay, cool. You've put all the pieces in place, and that makes sense. His book's ending. He's had this trauma in his book that may result in him being evil now, and that would be cool. And Monarch seemed militaristic, and it's not a stretch to think, okay, Captain Atom becomes Monarch. And everything was going to go that way. And then at the last time, the last minute, DC got nervous feet because apparently the word had got out through some phone line, of DC spoilers that someone was running. And they did a swerve at the last second, and they picked Hawk and Dove to be the sacrificial lamb because that book was also about to get cancelled. And even though we'd seen the Hawk and Dove future and it was nothing like this, they suddenly had Hawk become Monarch and travel back in time and kill Dove, and they ruined the entire story in a spectacular dumpster fire of a choice. Is that fair to say, Clinton?
Yeah, that's fair to say. I'm with you. I really kind of like the idea of Captain Atom becoming Monarch, but at the same time, if you look at the Hawk and Dove annual, the writing's kind of on the wall by that point. It's like editorial had already handed down the memo that said, no, we're changing this. Because throughout the Hawk and Dove story, the story changes.
Yeah.
There are a few pages where Dove's costume changes like four times in the span of four panels.
Yeah, it's not good.
No.
Yeah. Alrighty, so I guess we have to look at scoring this. Well, let's talk about what came out of it, because and as an event, I would say it's an occupier. It's giving all the books something to do. It's okay, what are we going to do with our annuals this year? Hey, everyone's going 10 years in the future, and we'll see what happens, and we'll tie it all together loosely with this character Wave Rider, and then we'll bookend it with these stories about what happens in the future for real. So that's what they did, and I think it's a pretty good occupier. But the only thing they really launched out of this was the destruction of the Hawk and Dove as a property for quite a long time. And well, I'd say forever. I don't think it's ever fully recovered from it. But they did two miniseries, would we say? So there was Armageddon, the Alien Agenda, which is a load of garbage, and four-issue miniseries with terrible art, with Monarch and Captain Atom bouncing through time. And I would have been interested to see what the real miniseries was meant to be before they had to put Monarch. I think it was originally meant to be Captain Atom fighting himself as Monarch, and that would have been probably more exciting. And the second miniseries to come out of it was Armageddon Inferno, which it was also terrible, but brought back the JSA because they were in limbo fighting Ragnarok, not the Thor movie, but a different, a different Ragnarok. So that's what came from that, is the JSA returned, which is a really good thing. It's like squeezing a pustule and finding a diamond. Anyway, so yeah, do you have any comments about those? You read any of those?
Armageddon, Alien Agenda, yeah, you pretty much summed it up. It's not great. It may be for Captain Atom completionists, but even then, I'm pretty sure most of them skipped over that. I have tried to read Inferno probably half a dozen times. I cannot finish issue one. I can finish issue four because that's where the JSA comes back. But that's literally it. You might as well just pick up issue four and call it the epilogue to Last Days of the JSA.
Yeah.
Also, though, there were epilogue issues in Action Comics number 670 and Superman number 61, which is pretty much just telling what happens to Wave Rider. He goes on to join the Linear Men and become a supporting player in the Superman books.
And it becomes the name of a spaceship in D-Clot, DC's yes, Legends of Tomorrow, which is fairly disappointing for him, I imagine.
Probably so, but I mean, at least we're keeping the property alive, somewhat, sort of. Well, the trademark, anyway.
Can I get a tall chai?
And a large black coffee.
And I suppose you're here with no agenda, as per usual?
On the contrary, I'm here for comics.
I think I can help all of you. Hello, I'm the caffeinated Clinton Robison, and I host a podcast called Coffee and Comics. On this podcast, I summarize, review, and discuss comic book issues, stories, and related media, usually in the span of time it takes to have a cup of coffee. Sometimes I'm joined by a guest, and sometimes I'm flying solo. So pour the coffee, take a sip, and turn up the volume as you listen to the Coffee and Comics Podcast. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, and directly on coffeeandcomicspodcast.blogspot.com. And remember, this is where the comics are never too old, and the coffee is never too cold.
So, I guess it's the part of the show where we ought to score this baby. So, now the way this works is Clinton and I, as the core people on the show, we get to give it scores out of 10 for eventiness, for art and covers, and for writing, and for the impact and legacy. So that gives us 40 points each. And then we have an extra person who is our semi-OCD, not as important as us. In this case, we've got Aaron Head Moss, and he's given us his scores as well. So we'll read them after we get through ours. So, Clinton, where are you on eventiness for this one?
Eventiness, I'm going to give it an 8. It crosses over through most of DC's major titles, but excludes others, so it kind of loses a couple of points. All the major characters more or less get to show up, especially at the battle with Monarch. And, I mean, it is kind of a life-or-death scenario for the future. And some heroes do kind of die.
Yeah. Yeah. The wrong ones, but yeah. All right. Well, I'm not as much in love with the writer, with the eventiness of it. I mean, I think it has a good spread of the annuals, but when you count all the double ups, you've got Superman, you've got Batman, so it really only goes into two Justice League titles: Superman, Hawk and Dove, Hawk World, Flash, Titans, Legion. And that's it. If you count Batman and Superman the multiple times, it's not across everyone. And there were quite a few other books around at the time that it could have visited, but so I'd say it does a good effort of hitting most of the big titles, and including the Justice League's help with that. So I give it a 6 for eventiness. Yeah. But, let's go to Aaron's thoughts on this. So he said, he gives it an 8 for eventiness, and he said, Armageddon 2001 was one of the first, if not the first, event that crossed over into the annuals. Only a few of the annuals were must-read, but they all tied into the event. As far as eventiness, it was pretty good, as it gave the annuals a little meaning and made people want to buy the annuals. While the stories were all what-ifs and didn't really mean anything in the actual future of the comics, for the event, it came across, again, pretty impressive. So that's his thoughts on it. So 8 from him. All right, so my feelings about the writing. As well it is written at the start, I am appalled by the end of it. I think, and in this case, I think I'm really scoring the editorial interference or the decision making that went into changing the story, because the end story doesn't really make a lot of sense, and you can sort of see the sticky tape on it where things got changed. And to me, that's pretty unforgivable, because you were all on the path, you set up a mystery, you told everyone, okay, we're going to do this mystery, you can follow along, you can see the clues, and you can map it out, and then you might be able to tell who's going to become Monarch. And then they changed it the last second to something that they did no groundwork for. So I'm going to give it a stinking 2 out of 10. I'm sorry.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, wow. But feel free to disagree with me, Clint.
I do. I'm going to give it an 8, because, I mean, even with the poor rewrite of the twist aside, all these annuals are really well written, even when they're not, directly involved in the crossover. Yeah, I mean, there are a few stinkers like New Titans and Flash and all that that just have nothing to do with anything they really are supposed to be doing. But even for what they are, this is like a murderer's row of writers at this time. It's good. The book ends even with the poor twist. God, that poor twist. They still bring you in. They're still involved. And I just got to give it an 8. I can reread it anytime.
Okay. Well, it's good we've got the balance between the two of us. we can average that into a sixth between us. But anyway, okay, so this was Aaron's thoughts on the and he's probably with you on the writing. Look at this. He's given it an 8. He said, overall, the writing was pretty good. There were different writers for each of the annuals, but also, as a negative, a big negative, the ending was severely compromised. If you don't know and want to read the story, well, I've already spoiled it, Aaron, so you can say it. Captain Adam was supposed to be Monarch. Rumor has it some tip line gave out this ending, and the DC powers that be decided that wasn't cool, so they changed the ending of the story and made it Hawk instead. And for the Hawk and Dove annual, Hawk and Dove were two people that it couldn't be, according to the annual. Anyway, he's going to do this next year on his podcast because he's doing a podcast about Armageddon 2001 that he's just recently started. Have you been involved with that, Clinton?
Yes, I've been on a couple of episodes so far.
Oh, cool. And you're going to keep being on it?
Supposedly, yeah. If my schedule works out all right, I'm supposed to be on at least one more, I think.
Well, that's good. I look forward to listening to those. Aaron also pointed out there was a bit of continuity weirdness about why Matthew Ryder was saved by a superhero and who it could have been, and it wasn't really explained. And Monarch went back to 1991 and started his reign 10 years earlier, and all, you know, and yeah, it gets messy. But he said, besides these minor missteps, and as I remember, most of the annuals were pretty good, some better than others, the entire story was pretty damn good. So 8 out of 10. So he's with you. All right. Now, art and covers. I want to sort of separate the main bookends because I think they've got pretty good art, except for there's a bit of shenanigans going on in the second one where things are getting changed. But for most part, I think the annuals were written by experienced writers, but I think some of the artists were pretty brand new to professional comics. So you've got people who went on to be pretty solid in the long term, like Andrew Robinson and Dusty Abel and people like that, but they were nascent talents at this time. I think they were, you know, pretty raw and rough, and getting given an annual was a safe place for them to practice. So I don't think the art is all that. So I'll be kinder than I am on the writing. I'll average it to 5. 5 out of 10. What do you think?
Again, I got to disagree with you.
Bloody hell. It's the last time you're coming
on. I'm just like that. No, the art, the covers, even with, you know, newbie artists, this is one for the ages. All of these covers are good selling points all throughout the annuals. I got to go with a 9. I mean, there are things you could nitpick in specific annuals. I'll agree with that. But overall, everybody holds up. They're all on model. There's not one page I can just pull out and say, this is terrible art. I might be able to look at it and say, this is not how I picture these characters. But I can't just say, you know, this is horrible and throw it across the room.
Jeez, why don't you just marry it, Clinton?
Maybe I will. Maybe I will.
All right, let's just check in with Aaron on this. See if he's in the crazy Clinton camp or the reasonable Paul camp. And no, he's an 8 out of 10 for art. And he said most of the annual covers were pretty damn good, and the art for the stories varied. Each annual had a different artist. Again, as with the writing, some annuals had better art than others. For instance, the Superman annual number 3 I wasn't impressed with, while Action Comics annual 3 I thought was pretty damn good. I need to swear. So, yeah, that's why he gives it 8 out of 10. So, okay, I might be in the minority on this. Anyway, impact and legacy. Okay, let's go to Aaron on this one first. And he said 8 out of 10. He said across the board 8s. He said Wave Rider was created in this event and went on to have lasting impact on Superman's comics. And Wave Rider also figured heavily into Zero Hour, which is another event that we'll be covering in the future. And Zero Hour tried to correct the mistakes made in Crisis. Were they mistakes or were they just the way things were handled afterwards? Anyway, that's another debate for a different episode. And it also had two different miniseries that came after. The first miniseries was forgettable. The second gave us the JSA back to the DCU. but it was also forgettable, I'm going to say. Also for Legacy, it changed Hawk and Dove forever. Boy, did it. Well, for a good decade. Dove eventually got better. She was never the same. And Darkest Night, Brightest Day gave it another event. We're going to cover that one day. Gave us the return of Hawk. So there was a Legacy for a while. And Monarch again, tied into Zero Hour a couple of years later for the JSA. And in Extreme Justice, I know of no such comic, Monarch played a role tying back in with Captain Atom, for good or ill. Overall, I really enjoyed this series, even with the editorial screw-ups on the ending. So what do you think about its impact and legacy, Mr. Robertson?
I have to echo Aaron's thoughts on all of that. That it's an 8. Monarch showed up in Zero Hour. He was around in that comic that you'd never heard of that was very extreme. Dove stayed dead for roughly a decade. I mean, that's pretty lasting in comics for, you know, if you look at things now, you know, most people don't stay dead 6 issues.
All right. So we got all our scores, or have I given an impact legacy? I haven't really, have I?
Nope, you have not. I'm sure you're going to say it's a 1, though.
I'm not that harsh. I'm going to give it a 2. I think every impact of this comic was a negative. Like, I don't think anything good came out of it except indirectly the return of the JSA, and that probably would have happened no matter how this had ended. I think it botched the ending and actually really damaged some good stuff in the DC universe at the time, namely Hawk and Dove as being viable characters that you could do things with. You know, they were, you know, male and female couple, they potentially romantic interest and, you know, really good dynamic between the two, and having one turn around and murder the other for no reason that made no sense. It made me fairly pissed off, which is why it gets a 2. So, that's what I think. So anyway, let's add all this together. So Clinton, your crazy high scores give it a 33 out of 40. My much more reasonable scores give it a 15 out of 40. And Aaron's insane high scores give it a 32 out of 40, but we halve his because he's semi-OCD and we get 16. And if we add all those together, we get 15, 16, 31 plus 33. We get 64. 64 out of 100, which is more than a pass mark on the scale. But yeah, that's what we think of Armageddon. So it beats Millennium, doesn't it? Yeah. So yeah, that's all we've got time for with that. So Clinton, where do people find you if they want to you know, hear more of your crazy thoughts on comics?
Well, if you want to hear more of my crazy thoughts on comics, I run a little podcast called Coffee and Comics. It comes out semi-regularly, but it's available on iTunes, Stitcher, and coffeeandcomicspodcast.blogspot.com. However, a couple years ago, for the 25th anniversary of Armageddon 2001, if anybody doesn't agree with Paul and they want to actually read more, I did blog about it. And that is at armageddon2001.blogspot.com.
And if you want to hear for more from Aaron Headmoss, he has the Head Speaks podcast channel, and he does a Task Force X podcast, which is on Checkmate and Suicide Squad, which is really cool. And he does a G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast about, I can't remember what that one's about. But you can find them all at headspeaks.com, and he's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and he's on Facebook. Just search for each show, or you can then look up the Headcast Network. So we're going back to the episode on Cosmic Odyssey, and we heard from Dr. Ange, and he said, "I'm surprised this one rose up to the event level, as in the end it is a mini-series and not some company-wide crossover." Yeah, we kind of cheated because we like it. But he said, "I love this mini-series, but as was mentioned, outside of Zanchi, I don't think there were any lasting ramifications. I guess this would be labeled a vanity project on your chart." So, yeah, it's a vanity project for Starlin. Now that he was with DC, and as you can see, this story taking place in Marvel with but a nudge. I'm sorry, you can see this story taking place in Marvel with but a nudge. Replace the living anti-life with Eternity, Darkseid with Thanos, or the Noz, as I call him, and Superman with Mar-Vell, and John Stewart with Tony Stark, and you're basically done. even with cosmic in the name, it tips the readers off that this will be like his cosmic stuff with Marvel. The one thing this went really has going for it is the art. Good God, Mignola can bring it. His fourth world is crazy good. But I especially love his Superman, broad-chested like Wayne Boring, massive S-shield, but inspirational, but throwing down when needed. His whole fight with the robot is pure brilliance, and Stalin characterizes Superman perfect to boot. I met Mignola at a con a few years back, and in front of me were people with stacks of Hellboy to be signed, and I plopped down all of Cosmic Odyssey, Gotham by Gaslight, and part one of World of Krypton, and he looked up at me and said, I bet you're one of those fans who'd be happy if I never left DC and did my own stuff, and I shrugged and said, that's true. He softly scoffed and signed my books anyway. good one, Ange. We also heard from Jimmy McGlinchey, and he said, Dear Paul and Mike, another great episode on an excellent storyline compared to the previous storylines covered, Crisis, Legends, and Millennium. It does not have the widespread inclusiveness that the other storylines had, but is very good mini-event nonetheless. I did enjoy the story a lot, though. Quite often I've read New Gods stories and struggled with the comic cosmicness of the concept. This was one of the first New Gods tales that I found easy to digest, despite its profound ideas and concepts. To compare with another event that you covered, while the discussion of the universe in Millennium came across as pretentious and confusing, the description of the anti-life equation in this story, which could easily have been mangled, was covered concisely and clearly by Stalin. And Mignola's art was stunning in this. His use of shadows on Superman, the embodiment of light, was particularly impressive. The only color coming from the S-shield really emphasized the stature of the Man of Steel and was a striking image in a series with many striking images. The major fallout of the story was John Stewart's actions. I read Cosmic Odyssey in trade paperback form after reading John Stewart in Gerard Jones's Green Lantern and Green Lantern Mosaic series. I was interested to read where it all came from. I understand Ryan's points that Cosmic Odyssey should have left him unsuitable as a Green Lantern thereafter, but Jones did manage to rehabilitate him, especially in Mosaic, which can be considered the Doom Patrol of Green Lantern comics. It was disappointing that nothing more was done with the anti-life equation, but this was much more tangible to me than what Morrison did in Final Crisis, another event we'll tackle. Thank you, Jimmy, and thank you, Ange. Excellent feedback. Well, I guess that's all we've got time for. So let us know what you think. You can contact us at DCOCDcast on Twitter, and you can send an email to DCOCDcast@gmail.com. And next time, we will be back for War of the Gods. I'm sorry. Anyway, thanks, Clinton.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, mate. Keep on podcasting, dude.
Definitely. I never knew that you'd get married. I would be living.